sick and tired of hearing things from uptight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth.
Hello, listeners, and welcome to this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Today on the show, I'm joined by Henry Lowendorf, chair of the Greater New Haven Peace Council, to talk about the International Day of Peace, which is on September 21st. He'll give you some ideas about how you, too, can push for peace. Henry, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be back.
Yes. Now, tell us about this International Day of Peace. Give us the background about that.
The International Day of Peace was designated as such by the United Nations. Well, it was designated by the United Nations on September 21st, 2001. And each year on that date, people around the world are urged to celebrate peace in some way, in some significant way, some way they feel is important. In New Haven, the City of New Haven Peace Commission took the lead in working with neighborhood organizations to get them to start celebrating. So there are a number of neighborhood organizations. The first one I think that they started working with was West River Development Corporation. And it held a celebration of the International Day of Peace perhaps 5 years ago. I don't remember the exact year. At a peace garden. There is in that neighborhood in New Haven on the corner of El Egresso Boulevard and Legion Avenue, there is a garden, a peace garden, and it's recognized by the United Nations as one of the few that exists in the country. And it's one of the few places where outside of the UN in New York, the UN flag can be flown. So at this peace garden, the West River Neighborhood Association or Development Corporation celebrated the International Day of Peace. And initially it was speakers talking about peace and the need for peace in order for children to grow up safely, in order for families to have resources, and so forth. That has expanded there in that neighborhood into a kind of carnival, a small carnival, every year around September 21st. It's usually on the weekend that's closest to September 21st. And it involves many people in the community. They have singers and other performers, cultural workers, some speakers. There are tables with information for people in the neighborhood from various nonprofit organizations, voter registration, that kind of thing.
But this is an international in scope, this program. And you tell us what you did last year with the pinwheels and the videos.
So I was just getting to that. 2 years ago, a little over 2 years ago, we were approached, the City of New Haven Peace Commission and the Greater New Haven Peace Council were approached by Nilda Morales, who is the head of the arts department for the whole school system. And she said, what I would like to do on International Day of Peace is put 5,000 pinwheels on the green and have a program of dance and song with the school children from New Haven. So we said, that's a terrific idea. We agreed to work with her on it. She brought together a number of people from the Department of Education, the head of the arts. She was the head of the arts, then the head of the music, the head of social studies, and others. And we brought some other people from the peace community, and we worked through this. And the suggestion came up that why couldn't we do some kind of linkage with a city somewhere else. One of New Haven's features is that it is a peace messenger city. There's an International Association of Peace Messenger Cities, cities that have been designated so because they're active in some way on peace issues. And the president of that organization is the same person as the chair of the City of New Haven Peace Commission, and that's Al Martyr. So he contacted people in the peace messenger cities in Kragujevac in Serbia, which is also a peace messenger city, and said, what if we did some kind of internet streaming of our event, and you hold a similar event there. And they agreed. So now we had a program being developed in New Haven that was going to find its counterpart 5,000 or 6,000 miles away in Serbia, which is one of the republics of the former Yugoslavia. And Al Martyr chose Kragujevac because it had suffered war. In the Second World War, it was bombed by the Nazis, and in 1998 and 99, it was bombed by the Clinton administration. So the children there knew war. The adults that lived there knew war. They knew what it meant. In New Haven, that generally isn't the case, except for returning veterans and their families. So it was an appropriate call, and we then invited someone from the United Nations to speak. The mayor was invited to speak, the superintendent of schools. We had kids streaming in from all of the fifth and sixth grades throughout the city. They were brought there on buses. Previously, art teachers had gotten their students to make these pinwheels that were maybe a foot tall. And the arts department of the school engaged the Eli Whitney Museum, which is a wonderful, wonderful private entity in New Haven that takes young people and gives them the opportunity to work with their hands. So they were engaged to come up with the posts for these pinwheels that could easily stick into the ground. I don't know if we managed to get 5,000 pinwheels, but we came close. And we spent the early part of the morning of September 21st putting these in the ground. And then the students came in on buses. We had Michael Mills, who initiated a group called Drums Not Guns, which is a drumming group that works with kids mainly and teaches kids how to drum. They drummed welcoming the children as they came in. As I said, they were fifth and sixth graders. So then there was a program of dance and singing, and the social studies department initiated an essay contest on peace. And the winners of that contest, the high school students, read an excerpt from their winning essays, which, by the way, were really outstanding. I was quite moved by what they wrote. They're really very thoughtful remarks about war and peace. And the high school students themselves were the MCs of the program. So that was streamed to Serbia. And the Serbians had their own program, which was streamed to us. And they did a program inside, and they had a big television screen so they could watch our program. We were unable to afford an outdoor television screen, so we were able to hear them over the loudspeakers, but we couldn't actually see them. But still, it was a spectacular success. And there is video and slideshow of that on the Internet.
What's the website for that?
The website is linked from the International Association of Peace Messengers Cities website, and that's www.iapmc.org, iapmc.org. There are also videos of the streaming that took place last year. So having had this successful streaming event between the school system of New Haven and Kragujevac in Serbia, we thought, well, we can do this. Let's expand it and see how many cities we can bring in. So we worked throughout the year to reach a number of cities. Mainly, these were cities that were members of the International Association of Peace Messenger Cities. And we managed to reach a professor of media arts at Quinnipiac University, Philip Simon, who organized the technical issues around doing the streaming. He got some of his graduate students to work on the technical issues for credit. It was part of their graduate program. So last year, we arranged to do a program at the Arts Magnet School, the high school in New Haven on College Street, in their auditorium. And children were brought from a number of other schools to perform. There were two choirs and a set of dancers and some speakers. And they did that performance from there, and we linked with the city of Wieluń, Poland, which also did a program primarily in one classroom. And so we had this video interchange. Each side took about half an hour, and we shared that. Now, there were a number of other cities around the world that joined together in pairs. Cambridge and, I think, Volgograd in Russia, and Płońsk, Poland, and there was a city in Cyprus, Kragujevac, and another city in Serbia, La Paz, Bolivia, and Mexico, and Chicago did a three-way. So there were a bunch of these that took place last year. And each city, each classroom or each school system decided what it was going to do, and they worked out exactly the kind of program there would be, half an hour here, half an hour there, or however it would be, 10 minutes here, 10 minutes there, back and forth. Whatever they wanted to do, they could do. And we used a program that Google provides called Google Hangout to do the exchange. We had at least one technical person coordinating centrally from the New Haven area from our side, and then each school had to have its own technical person. Really, all you need for this kind of thing is a fast internet connection and something like a laptop computer that has...
Now, Henry, let me ask you, are you only using school students, or could peace groups anywhere join this?
The answer to that is anyone could do this, and we would like to see lots of groups do this. We've talked to a school in New Haven for adults with disabilities, and maybe there would be a similar organization in some city abroad that would like to do this streaming. That could be done. It could be a peace organization, could be a fraternal organization. I see it as a sort of annual video pen pal operation, which is more than one person on each side, but a group of people. You plan a program, and what we've been able to do with New Haven, in any case, is we work with a city where the students study English, and so we can have the joint program in English. To the extent that we have students from foreign countries that have immigrated to the United States and bring a language with them, if we have a number of them, we could do it in multiple languages. That's certainly possible. Same website has the videos from a half a dozen of these streaming efforts. And I urge people to go to the Peace Messenger Cities website and click on the link and look at some of the videos. And especially if there are, among your audience, there are parents or teachers who would like to do that, they can sign up on the Peace Messenger Cities website, contact us. We get you together with another city and deal with the technical work. What each school or organization has to do is decide what kind of program you want to have.
So it's nice that you can do this and get children involved and people around the world connected around peace. But what's the significance? I mean, how is this going to contribute to peace in the world?
And that's an important question. One of the problems we face is that day to day, people don't talk about the issues of peace and war. People don't talk about the cost of war to a society, that is engaged in war. We rarely, in this country, talk about the trillions of dollars that we have spent of our precious resources and our young people, their lives. We have spent those in wars. And I would argue, I do argue, that most of those wars are unnecessary and they don't benefit the vast majority of the people of this country. They benefit a very small minority. So we don't talk about that. But here's an opportunity not only for the teachers to talk about and get the students to start talking about it, but also to share those thoughts with students from a different country, which may or may not have been engaged in war, but to see what they say and also see how they celebrate. It also encourages people to see as one day out of the year, at least one day out of the year, where you celebrate peace. Where do we do that? And it's a way for children to reach out. It is a way for the parents to be engaged, the school systems to be engaged, and go abroad without actually flying a plane or however you might go. You can start reaching out. I hope that if we do this enough, that it will lead to ongoing connections between two schools, as in a pen pal situation. Why shouldn't a classroom in New Haven be linked to a classroom in Russia or Japan or South America on an ongoing basis? And then they could share projects.
Around the issues of peace, of war and peace.
They could share projects on environment. Different countries around the world are going to be and are being affected by environmental change and climate change in different ways. How is that seen? They're affected by economic situations. They're affected by social situations. The economic crisis affects different countries, and it affects the children as much as it affects anybody else, even more so. So here's a way to start sharing your own experiences and learning from other people's experiences with technology that is fantastic. We would never have been able to do this 20 years ago.
Right, and I think you bring up a good point about how we don't talk about war and peace in this country. I mean, people even, I'm amazed when we talk about the economy and how we don't have any money, no one looks at the trillions we've spent on the wars and makes that connection.
That's correct. You know, in I think the last time we talked about this bill that we've arranged to be passed in both the state Senate and the state House that calls for a commission to explore how to keep and create manufacturing jobs, but not making war material, not making killing machines, weapons, but rather making things that the civilian society needs, and also things that are engineered for the new century, where we really need to cut down on fossil fuel energy use. We need to find alternative ways of transportation. We need to reduce waste in all sorts of ways. Many of these things are already possible. We're just not taking advantage of them. But what can Connecticut do to encourage this kind of manufacturing, to ensure that the highly skilled workers that we have in this state stay here and have jobs that are working for the civilian society, not working for the Pentagon? So these are things that we found very difficult in the past to have a conversation with our members of Congress about. But the state representatives overwhelmingly passed this commission. And when we talk about it with people in the neighborhoods, and I do canvassing, people are open to the idea. And many things people just haven't spoken about. They're very sympathetic, very supportive, but it's not in the news.
Now, I understand that bill is before the governor, and can you tell us a little bit about where that's at? Because I know both the House and the Senate passed it.
They did. They passed it overwhelmingly. It's now called Public Act 13-19, and it's an act concerning the Commission on Connecticut's Future. And it was sent to the governor last week. He has 15 days to veto it or sign it or allow it to become law without taking any action. So we're now in the process of asking our supporters to give the governor's office a call and say, sign it. Let's not waste any time. This is an important thing. And then we have to be thinking about what the composition. We know what the kind of membership commission has because that's part of the law, but we want to make sure that the people on the commission are very supportive of its goals and will work hard to explore all of the possibilities.
Yeah, and again, are we the only state in the nation who has put forward a bill like this?
As far as we know, we are the only state that has done this. And in fact, the large peace organizations around the country have picked this up and are looking at it as a model for what they can do within states around the country.
Yeah, it's really monumental, and that's fantastic.
Well, I think it's really important. The proof will be in what we can accomplish because we've made this progress so far, which I think is very impressive and very important within one session of the state legislature with the support of the whole New Haven delegation. They were all co-sponsors. And Tony Harp and Tony Walker, who are two representatives from New Haven, are the co-chairs, I think, of the Appropriations Committee. They pushed this so that it would get a hearing. We have an opportunity now. That's, to me, what we have is an opportunity. We have to take advantage of that opportunity and make this successful. There's a history, I'm sure I mentioned it last time we talked, there's a history of trying to get military conversion in the state of Connecticut, which has a significant amount of weapons industries, and it starts 25, 30 years ago. So it's appropriate that we try to build on that history and take advantage of the sensibility and the sensitivity of the people in the state.
Now, tell me, how is the peace movement in the U.S. responding to this International Day of Peace and the program that you're putting on, the video streaming?
Well, this is something that we're trying to get other organizations to participate in. Last year, we had some feelers, and we had a considerable amount of discussion from people in Philadelphia and in Canada, in Montreal. They did something differently, but we're trying to reach peace organizations, say, you can take advantage of this. Do this in your town. The peace movement in the United States is very atomized. There are some major national organizations, and there are lots of local organizations throughout the country. But the current status of the peace movement in the United States is very precarious. And it's strange because we have a peace majority. We have 70% of the people who said get out of Iraq and get out of Afghanistan, and 70% of the people who say we don't want to get into another war in Syria or Iran. And yet we see more wars on the horizon. So it's really incumbent on us as citizens, whether we call ourselves peace people or not, to get involved in this, because another war will be more disastrous. One of the things we've learned is that there are mayors in the Middle East who really feel that they're sitting on a powder keg, that the ongoing violence in Syria, it's already expanded to Lebanon, it's expanded to Turkey, it could expand further. And they're very concerned that the flames of this violence are being fanned and are being fed. They're really fed by oil. The whole oil issue is what's feeding them. This is not theoretical anymore. This is real. And the violence we've seen in Afghanistan that's ongoing, and in Iraq after combat troops left, but lots of troops are still there and private contractors are still there and a U.S. subservient government is still there. That violence that's ongoing, if we look at the news, we see 24 people bombed.
Right.
It doesn't end, because a country where the people didn't distinguish themselves by their religious convictions now do. And that the United States is responsible for. And we're doing the same thing in Syria right now. We're
right.
doing the same thing in Syria. So I urge people to let their members of Congress and their representatives know that this is just unacceptable. We have to get the U.S. out. It's really remarkable to me, for example, that our government talks about bringing democracy to Syria. And the two countries that are most responsible for providing arms are Qatar and Saudi Arabia, two tyrannies. They're dictatorships.
They're also close friends of ours, aren't they?
They're good friends, yes.
Yes.
But they're only doing it because the United States says to do it. They don't have an arms industry. The United States has the arms industry. Where are they getting the arms to send to Syria? That's coming from or through the United States. So the United States isn't in the position of starting to get involved in Syria. We've been involved from the very beginning through these proxies that are not democracies.
And if you look at what we've done in Iraq, and we know now that we went there based on lies, and we've killed over 1 million people, it's estimated, displaced millions. They're still living without most of what they need. We've privatized everything. Doing the same in Afghanistan. We did it in Libya with the help of others, but now in Syria. When are the American people going to say, hey, stop?
Well, they have, actually. One thing is to realize that it's not up to the United States to determine what the government of Syria is or the government of Iran. That's up to the Syrians and the Iranians. We would go to war if some other country said to us, you can't have that person as president, you can't have that government. That other country tells us what government we're going to have. We would fight a battle. People would really be up in arms over that. And yet, that's what our country is, our government, is saying to the Syrians and to the Iranians. You have to have a government that is acceptable to the United States. That's not sovereignty. That's not what our Declaration of Independence says. That's not what our Constitution says. But that's what our government is doing. It's totally unconstitutional. It goes against the grain in the United States. Unfortunately, it's typical of U.S. foreign policy. We told the Nicaraguans, you can't have that government. You have to have a government that we agree on. We told the Iranians in 1953, you can't have a democratic government. We have to install the Shah. And on. We've done that with South America over and over again.
Right. And how do you see the American people saying no to this?
Well, I think what is the biggest problem is that this is never presented to the American people in a context, the historical context of how the U.S. has fought these wars, over what it has fought these wars, and the idea that the United States has the right to tell other countries how they're going to be governed. People are not presented that information. I ask any of your listeners, when did you hear a talking head? When did you hear a president? When did you hear someone from Congress say, the United States has no right to tell other countries who their government will be, and we have no right to invade them or find mercenaries to invade them or to assassinate their leaders or to overthrow their governments? There's a list that goes up one arm and down the other that we've done just in the last 50 or 60 years. We can go back to 1848 when the United States invaded Mexico. They invaded Mexico and it took California and Arizona and New Mexico, what we consider our Southwest, from Mexico. That was okay. That's been accepted, right?
Right, and now they get upset when Mexican, quote, immigrants come back into that area.
Right, well, as the Mexicans say, We didn't cross the border crossed us. Well, the border was stolen. That's what happened. We have a problem in this country, and this is true of any imperial country, that the information that's provided both in the media and in the textbooks in the schools does not at all cover the imperial nature of the country, the imperial nature of the government, the imperial nature of the big corporations that buy the government.
Right. Everything we do is for freedom and democracy everywhere we go is the story. And Henry, how many people do you think know that we have over 900 military bases around the world?
Well, it's going to be a very small number. In the peace movement, we try to reach people, and we do, but we haven't so far had the kind of media reach that the Koch brothers have, or that CNN has, or that the New York Times has. We don't have that kind of reach. You can take out an ad in the New York Times for $64,000 for a full page, but we don't have that kind of money. So we have to depend on new media. We have to depend on social networks. We have to depend on the internet, email, websites, tweets. And you have to learn how to do it, and we have to learn how to use them, but they have their limitations.
But the more people that get involved, then the stronger any movement becomes. So tell people again how they can get involved in the International Day of Peace and the streaming video.
The easiest thing is for people who have a internet connection to go to the Peace Messenger City's website and link to International Day of Peace. It's in the upper right of the homepage. The website is IAP as in peace, M as in messenger, C as in city, IAPMC.org. It's that website, and there are links to sign up. There are links to the videos from last year and 2 years ago.
I'm going to encourage the listeners to do that and to learn more about it, or at least just go to the website and learn more about the International Day of Peace and the Peace Messenger Cities, which I didn't know about until this conversation. So that sounds pretty interesting to me. But anyway, Henry, we're almost out of time. Is there anything else you'd like to say to the audience?
Well, I urge the audience to get involved in some peace issue. Find a local group, find a local cause, get involved. Peace is everybody's business, and if we're not individually involved in it in some way, even if it's small, you can sign a petition, you can write a letter, you can make a phone call to your congresspeople or to your local representatives. Just do something on behalf of peace, because we really need everybody to get involved in it. Otherwise, it's an uphill battle in any case, but we can only win if people, the 70% who want to see us out of all of these wars, actually takes action. That's really what's important.
That's a great message, Henry. Thanks again for all you've done to get the peace conversion bill through the Connecticut General Assembly. And let's hope the governor signs that.
Yeah, well, we're going to work on that. So thank you, Cheryl. It's been a pleasure.
You've just been listening to an interview with Henry Lowendorf, chair of the Greater New Haven Peace Council. And the website, if you want to get involved with the International Day of Peace on September 21st, is www.iapmc.org, iapmc.org. And some really good news, the day after this interview was recorded, Connecticut Governor Dan Malloy signed the Peace Conversion Bill into law. Connecticut is the first state to do something like this, so those of you living in Connecticut should be really proud of what our Connecticut legislature and governor have just done. And on another positive note, there are now 1,931 architects and engineers who have signed the petition demanding a new investigation into the events of 9/11. Their research has shown that the official story of how the Twin Towers and Building 7 collapsed is both unscientific and fraudulent. To learn more about that petition by the 1,931 architects and engineers and read their large body of research, their website is ae911truth.org. This concludes this edition of 9/11 Wake Up Call. I'm Cheryl. Thanks for listening.